Steve McQueen by Sheryl Crow from her 2002 album Come On, Come On, and this garnered her a, I believe it was a Best Female Rock Performance Grammy in 2003. Astronomers are preparing to search for alien life at a nearby habitable exoplanet. The Wolf 1061 star system is a mere 14 light years away, and a team of astronauts are doing the groundwork to begin looking for signs of extraterrestrial biology in one of its planet's atmospheres. And you can read more about that at the website in the news section at coasttocoastam.com, where our webmaster tonight, Sean Latasur, has posted that and many others. Don't forget to join George Norrie, Coast to Coast AM's George Norrie, for dynamic discussions on paranormal phenomena, conspiracies, and all things unexplained on his internet TV show, Beyond Belief. You can sign up for just 99 cents for the first month at beyondbelief.com and enjoy hours of fascinating past shows. Back with more of my conversation with Marcus Allen of Nexus Magazine as we discuss the lunar landing hoax, plus your calls when Coast to Coast AM continues. Welcome back. Marcus Allen stays with us, publisher, distributor for Nexus Magazine. Before we get back to the calls, Marcus, another plausible explanation. The lunar landings happened. However, the NASA and the U.S. government could not take a risk that, let's say, for example, the telephone or the television feed from the lunar surface was interrupted, or that these photographs wouldn't turn out, because then people would say, "You see, it didn't happen." They couldn't take that risk. There was so much at stake here. You mentioned the Cold War and how this was an attempt to drain the Soviet Union financially. There was so much at stake, American pride and so forth. So perhaps they merely filmed the simulations, the live simulations, on a sound stage or wherever they did this. So the photographs and the video was all done ahead of time. The lunar landings took place, but they released these photographs that were shot beforehand to the public. And this was done again in an effort to ensure, as an insurance policy, to ensure that the landing was seen in the best possible light. Is that not a plausible explanation?
Absolutely. That's a very plausible explanation. And it's quite likely to be fairly near to the truth as well. Because it's necessary to look at the times during which the Apollo missions happened, the late 60s, early 70s. What else was going on in the world at the time? The Vietnam War, we've already mentioned, was turning very unpleasant, the My Lai massacre in 1968. The Cold War with the Soviet Union, as it was then, that was getting a bit hot. It had been hot since the Bay of Pigs in 1961, the Cuban Missile Crisis, 1962, President John Kennedy being assassinated in 1963, then you got Robert Kennedy being assassinated in 1968, Martin Luther King being assassinated. This was a turmoil of the highest order. There was a great deal that was unpleasant. There was a great deal going on that was actually very difficult for people to comprehend. It was necessary to have good news. The Apollo programs were being projected as the good news of American technical ability and superiority. This was necessary. President Nixon, Richard Nixon, was president during the actual landing in July 1969. It was necessary to try to divert attention from some of the most unpleasant experiences of the human condition during the 20th century. I mentioned the 58,000 Americans who died during the Vietnam War. There were many more people dying, and the world was in turmoil, in effect. There was social and cultural change going on in the 60s with the advent of the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, who were prominent at the time in the music business. The film business was going through really quite major changes. At the end, the Stanley Kubrick film, 2001, A Space Odyssey, was considered one of the great films of the time. These were things which were the good news. Now, whether it was necessary for the Apollo missions to... Well, And I say it was necessary for the Apollo missions to succeed in order that the world could be balanced from the bad news that was going on all the time. The Vietnam War scenes were being transmitted on television into people's living room. It was really difficult. So in order to create the good news of the landing on the moon, which was a great challenge, which Kennedy had set down in May 1961, before the end of the decade, and the decade was rapidly ending at this point, it was necessary for it to be seen to happen. So various Plan Bs were put into action. Plan B was to ensure that, irrespective of what actually happened out in space, it would be necessary to see man walking on the moon. Now, when the astronauts were being trained and all the equipment was being put together, whether it's from Boeing for the lunar rovers, whether it was the rockets from Lockheed, or whether it was the landers from Grumman, there were companies all around the United States which were contributing to this. They were not a part of any deception. The deception was planned by a very, very few people. And it was basically the plan B. If things go wrong, how can we ensure that we are seen to succeed? The films were taken of all the training and simulation exercises. The lunar rover was simulated. The command module had a simulator. The lunar module had a simulator. There's nothing secret about this at all. These are all in public view. Because if you're going to do something like this, it's always best to hide things in plain view. So you have your simulator. Well, this is what we're doing. They'll say we're simulating to enable the astronauts to train for it. We'll film it in real time. If it's an eight-day mission, it was filmed in 8 days in order to train everybody for what was going to happen. Even a satellite was launched just before the alleged real missions, in order that signals could be received from space by the command center at Houston. When you see the film of people studying the television screens in the command center at Houston, do you know what they're actually looking at? Do they know what they're actually looking at? They're seeing figures, whether it's the medical data coming from an astronaut, whether it's the technical data coming from the rocket. All they're doing is looking at the data that they're seeing in front of them. They don't know where it's coming from. If it's a simulated mission, it would be coming from space, from the satellite that had been launched specifically for this purpose.
Right, right.
So they could do all this, and it was necessary for it to be trained. I mean, that's what you do in a situation like this. But was it real?
Well, you at least hold out the possibility that the lunar landings were real, but the photographic evidence, the film, that was the insurance policy shot perhaps on a soundstage somewhere because they needed that to make sure that it was seen to be done.
It would be seen to be done. This is the point. It would be seen to be done. They could have the insurance policy as a backup.
All right. Wildcard line, Jim is in Confluence, Pennsylvania. Jim, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Good morning. How are you tonight?
I'm well, thank you.
A few comments I'd like to make. Number one, I'm about 80 years old now and retired. During the Mercury program, I worked for NASA in the Tracking and Data Division, which handled the communications, the electronics, etc. I spent the last 30 years working as an engineer for NBC and CBS television. There are several things I have to say. Number one, the Apollo missions were real. Two, there is no way the missions could have been conducted without the Russians, the Chinese, whoever was watching this, because we were in a race with them, knowing that we had faked the project, because the transmissions came from the surface of the moon on a microwave frequencies which could not be simulated here on the Earth, or from a satellite. You had to lock right on the frequency and follow the moon. If it was on a satellite, it would have moved out of position. If it was on the ground, it was focused with radio equipment with the parabolic dishes, which are extremely directional. There is no way that could have taken place. Number two, the various stages, including the lunar lander, the ascent module, the command module, and the fourth stage, which was the S-4B, all have separate radio frequencies and transmissions. When these units separated, you could track them individually, going in different directions. I was not with NASA at the time the Apollo programs took place. However, I know several of the astronauts who walked on the moon. We did track the equipment and the transmissions by ham radio. We had some ham radio operators have some fantastic equipment. We knew their frequencies. We tracked them. They had on the lunar lander itself and on the spacesuits a 5-watt transceiver, which they could talk between the communications on the from the astronaut to the lunar lander, which then relayed it on the 2 gig megahertz band back to Earth. And these frequencies that they used was on 296 to 298 megahertz. They were 5 watts. We were able to track them and listen to them talking on the moon. There is no way that that could have been faked. There is no way it could have been simulated. Then, as far as some of the pictures that were taken on the Earth, a lot of the TV transmissions, for instance, some of them were deliberately altered by somebody who was trying to make the program appear fake. What they did was they had one picture where the Apollo is coming down off of the lunar lander, and this is taken supposedly from one of our cameras on the moon, and you see a fellow standing in front of him with a motion picture camera taking pictures of it. And what they did, they ran through a series of processes known as chroma keying. They had a guy standing on the side someplace. They overlaid his picture on the moon picture and made it said that that was faked on the moon. That wasn't fake. That was deliberately done by somebody not at NASA, but with somebody trying to smear the Apollo program.
All right, Jim, you make some excellent points. Let me get Marcus in here to respond. But, Jim, thank you so much for the call. Great points.
It's certainly possible to do it, yes. That's not in dispute. Whether what was being heard by the ham radio operators who were listening in, and there were people who were listening in, whether they were hearing it from the lunar surface or whether it was from an orbiting satellite, really cannot be determined. It's quite easy to say they were transmitting from the lunar surface on the 2 megahertz wave band. Yes, they were. That was a known piece of technical knowledge. Whether it was coming from the lunar surface or whether they were tracking, you say that you were tracking the S-4B, which was the third stage of the rocket that allegedly went to the moon. The lunar module itself, the command module, whether it could track that on radar, which is what supposedly happened, I would dispute that insofar as it is not possible for radar to separate an object of such small size at such great distance, because there is a chart which apparently was recorded at Jodrell Bank in the UK, who were following the Russian craft, Luna 21, that was going to the moon at the same time as Apollo 11. They were using their big 300-foot diameter dish to track the Russian craft, and they were using the 50-foot dish to track the American craft, and a chart was produced showing the descent of the Apollo 11 craft onto the lunar surface, and they show the point at which Neil Armstrong takes over manual control. Now, is a radar able to determine an object 10 foot in diameter at 240,000 miles, I would dispute that it is. It would be able to pick up the radio signal, but a radar is completely different. So there is a great deal of information out there, and if people want to believe it happened, I want to believe it happened. Your caller wants to believe it happened. He worked for NASA, and I'm very, very glad that he phoned in, because I would say, look, if you worked for NASA, please tell us your experience of what happened, whether it's good, bad, or whether it's just you think I'm a complete idiot. Let's hear about it, because there are now more and more people who worked for NASA who are coming forward to say it was actually faked. And I can prove it because I was there. There are filmmakers who can look at the photographs and have looked at the photographs and say, I can see five light sources on the lunar surface. We know they weren't there, so this was during the training and simulation exercise.
Jim mentioned the Russians, Marcus. If, in fact, it was a hoax, the Russians would, especially, you know, that mischievous Putin, and that's about the nicest thing one could say about him, he's mischievous, he would like nothing better than to take the United States down a couple of pegs and proclaim that it was a hoax. Or the Chinese. If it was a hoax, why wouldn't they come forward?
They have come forward. I've actually appeared on Russian television talking about this. I couldn't understand what I was saying because I was dubbed into Russian, but I was filmed in London by Russian television where they were making a short program about the moon landings. Yes, this is one of the major points that is put forward. If America had fabricated anything, the Russians would have blown the whistle. That's the first thing that most people will say. They did blow the whistle, but we didn't hear it. The Russians had fabricated some of their achievements, and it was known about because a lot of the Russian transmissions from their orbiting spacecraft, their mancraft, were being picked up in Italy by the Giudice Cordiglia brothers, who were working out of Turin. They were recording the Russian craft as it went overhead, and they were hearing things which were not being reported, that some of the craft had gone into orbit around the sun because they'd fired the rockets at the wrong time. Some people did die in space. So it was known that the Russians had fabricated some of the information. When Yuri Gagarin allegedly orbited the moon in April 1961, which was the trigger for the American moon landings, 6 weeks later in May 1961, when John Kennedy made his announcement, when Yuri Gagarin exited his craft, he parachuted out. He didn't land in the craft. Now, technically, that means that he didn't actually complete the mission correctly. He was a trained parachutist. He wasn't a trained astronaut at the time. How do we know that the transmission we heard from allegedly Yuri Gagarin in his orbiting spacecraft was not a pre-recorded message that was transmitted to the craft and then transmitted back down again? We don't know for certain. Was it a tape recording? Because the Russians were quite good at operating from a remote distance. That is what they did. It was a point that Buzz Aldrin made. He said, we were passengers. They weren't pilots. They were passengers. They were on their craft to give the impression of doing all the things which NASA claimed that they were doing. Because the only source of information we have is from NASA. Now, if the Russians had spotted anything and said, hello, you know, it's all fake, the first thing that America would do, specifically NASA, is to say, well, if you say we're fake, then we're going to show that you're fake as well. We're going to show that you didn't do what you claim to have done. They were a very closed society. They didn't necessarily have the information that would be available throughout Britain, Europe, and throughout the rest of the world.
So it was almost like mutually assured destruction. The Americans had dirt on the Russians, or the Soviets on the Americans, and neither were willing to risk being outed by the other.
That's right. They were basically, there was a lot of cooperation going on between the Soviet Union and America at the time. Don't forget the Apollo-Soyuz link-up. That didn't happen just overnight. That was planned well in advance.
Okay, Marcus, I got to jump in here. We've got to take a timeout. We'll come back and finish up strong with questions and comments for Marcus Allen, publisher of Nexus Magazine. Here's Lake Marie by the great John Prine taking us into the break on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. We're heading down the stretch. I have a television program which is kind of a companion to my radio program. It's also called The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. We've produced four seasons worth, 50 episodes, which aired across Canada on Vision TV, and it also can be seen in parts of Europe, Africa, Southeast Asia, Australia, in the United States. You can buy or rent it on seasons 1 through 3 on Amazon.com, and you can also watch it on Hulu TV. Visit theconspiracyshow.com. for more information. And while you're there, be sure to visit the online store and check out the Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett merch, tees and hoodies and sweats, mugs and phone cases, theconspiracyshow.com. If you've got a line, hold on to it. We'll try to get to as many questions and comments for Marcus Allen as we discuss the lunar landing hoax right here on Coast to Coast AM. All right, I want to try and work through as many of these calls as we can in the remaining moments, so let's try and keep things tight and succinct and to the point. Marlo on the wildcard line is checking in from Long Beach, California. Good morning, Marlo.
Good morning, Mr. Serrett. And you're Mr. Allen, was it, right? Marcus Allen?
Yes, hello there.
Yes, hi. Just a comment, I'm at a kind of a disadvantage because I didn't hear the first 2 hours of the program because of the way it broadcast here in Los Angeles, but the comment that struck me the strongest was, and maybe I misheard you, but it sounded like your description of the compartmentalizing of this thing could have been limited to 30 to 40 people would have knowledge of it. Does that include the people that did the filming? I've been on film sets. I've been on TV film sets, and just the technical people alone outnumber that. Something as extensive as this kind of a hoax would involve far more, in my mind, including all the people that would have to do the analysis of the rocks. I mean, they found that. The claim that we retrieved rocks and the scientific people that did that, are you saying they were involved in it too? Or because they found mostly basalt rocks that were Earth-like? I think there was some distinction, though. And then there was aging of it and the like. So there's a lot of scientific data there. Were those people involved in that as well? I happen to work for TRW, which designed and built the variable descent engine, excuse me, on the LEM, and I've looked at some designs there. I missed the first 2 hours. I'm not sure how much of this you're saying is a hoax, but what we did learn during the Nixon era was follow the money. So what I'd like to know is what funded your research? How did you come up with these conclusions, and who's paying for it?
All right, Marlo, good questions all. There's a lot there to work with, Marcus. Let's start with compartmentalizing. It's true, on a crew in a studio with lights and so forth, that's going to put you over the 30 mark right there.
Absolutely, if that is what happened, because the assumption is that there was some sort of secret sound studio, usually identified as being in Area 51, which is complete nonsense. No. The people who were doing the filming were doing it quite openly and quite knowledgeably. What they were doing was recording the simulated exercises on the sound stages, which were being used, again, quite openly. There was nothing secret about any of this filming. All the film crew were employed by the companies that were contracted to do it, and they were recording the evidence that they were using on the simulated exercises. There was no secret soundstage somewhere. This is a bit of a mythology which has grown up because it seems to explain it in a rather exciting way. No, it's a very boring and tedious thing because they were filming the actual simulated exercises.
I think we have O.J. Simpson and Capricorn 1. I think we have O.J. Simpson and Capricorn 1 to thank for that mythology. But so you're saying that the film crews, they believed, and they were right, they were simply doing their job, filming, taking photographs of the simulation. They had no idea that those would be substituted for the actual lunar landing.
Absolutely, yeah.
And what about the rocks, the moon rocks?
Oh, the famous moon rocks, yes, wonderful. 340-odd pounds of moon rock. There's a stack about sort of 5 or 6 foot high. There's quite a lot of moon rock there. And we're told that they came from the moon. Well, possibly they did. The Russians certainly acquired some moon dust. And yes, hundreds of universities around the world, not just in America, but around the world, have examined this moon rock. And they have concluded various results as a result of their examination. But what is not generally known is they didn't receive a sort of fist-sized lump of rock. What they received was a few grains of dust in a box. dispatched by NASA marked moon rock. So they knew what they were examining. It wasn't that they were comparing and contrasting different types of rock, such as rock from the Columbia River Basin, or from Hawaii, or from any of the other volcanic areas, because the moon is supposed to be volcanic. There is also the rather amusing story of the piece of moon rock, which was deposited in the Rijksmuseum in Amsterdam. It was presented to the Prime Minister of Holland at the time of the Apollo missions, when the astronauts were doing their world tour, their Giant Leap world tour, taking the plaudits of all the countries and the prime ministers and presidents around the world that they visited. They presented moon rock to them. And this piece of moon rock, which was apparently presented to the prime minister of the Netherlands, was eventually deposited in the Rijksmuseum and on display there. And when the Rijksmuseum underwent its major renovation a few years back, this moon rock was removed, and the geologists in Holland said, "Oh, could we have a look at it, please?" Which they did, and it was discovered to be a piece of petrified wood, which is not rock, it's wood. It's petrified wood, so it's mineralized. But we're not told that there was petrified wood on the moon.
Not so as far as we know.
What's this piece of rock doing? So apparently 50 states throughout America were presented with a piece of moon rock. Can you go and see it? Can you ask in your local museum to see the piece of moon rock? Quite a lot of it is missing.
Final question Marlo had is, who are you working for, and who's paying for your research?
Oh, who am I working for? good question. Now the truth will come out. I'm working for Marcus Allen. That's me. I pay for it by working quite hard in promoting Nexus Magazine. And as the publisher of Nexus Magazine, obviously I receive an income because it's very difficult to live without an income these days. Nobody outside pays me. If I make a presentation, I will get my expenses covered, my petrol cost or my gas cost to go to wherever the presentation is to be made. I may even receive a little bit extra on top. But nobody pays me to do it. I do it because I have a fascination for the space program.
All right, wildcard line. Elbert is in Columbia Falls, Montana. Elbert, welcome to Coast. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. I'll try to make it as brief as I can because I know you've got a lot of people waiting. Years and years ago, I'm kind of an old guy, I had a very good friend who had been working at NASA during these years we're talking about. He had a very high security clearance. So I one time said, "Hey, did we really go to the moon?" And the answer somewhat set me back. Here's near as I can, the exact quote was, "Yes, but you never saw any photographs." I said, "What do you mean?" "Well, they were all, mostly all of them were manufactured in Hollywood movie sets, with very elaborate movie sets." "Why?" The answer was, "Because there were things there that they didn't want the public to see." And I got the body language, because I knew this person pretty well, that I shouldn't be asking any more questions. That was really the outside limit of what they could say. So we never brought that subject up again, but I can guess. I mean, what could it possibly be? I mean, maybe something that Jordan Knapp talks a lot about? I don't know.
Alien structures on the moon. Is that what they were hiding and supposedly airbrushed out of? We also hear the other side, that they airbrushed these photographs, Marcus, so that we wouldn't see the alien structures on the moon.
That is a persistent story that has been maintained ever since the photographs were first produced, that there were other things on the moon. And if we go back to 1958, the Brookings Institute report, which was basically commissioned by NASA to say, if we discover intelligent life outside of Earth, what do we do? That was the question. And the answer was, shut up about it. Don't mention it. Don't say anything. Because of social unrest and various religious considerations that people had at the time. That has been maintained ever since. There have been stories of objects on the moon. There are various reports which are uncorroborated that astronauts saw things. Specifically, Neil Armstrong is reported to have said he saw things on the lunar surface, which he didn't want to talk about and couldn't talk about because of this restriction on the discussion of intelligent life on the moon. The famous phrase when Apollo 8 went round the back of the side of the moon and came out into radio contact again and said, "Please be advised there is a Santa Claus," which is always supposed to mean that Santa Claus was an alien object of some sort. I don't know. It makes a good story. There are persistent stories of airbrushing of photographs taken by orbiting craft of the lunar surface. Whether they're true or not, we'll probably never know, because there appears to be a persistent belief that if it is discovered that there is intelligent life outside Earth, that the whole of society on Earth will collapse into a quivering heap of complete nonsense. It's absolute rubbish. This won't happen. We would love to know if there is intelligent life beyond Earth. If you go into the work of people like Eric von Daniken, Zachariah Sitchin, who've examine this from a completely different aspect, they will say, yes, there is plenty of evidence that there is intelligent life existing more than 6,000 years ago on Earth.
All right, Marcus, I want to move to the next caller on the wildcard line. Thomas is in La Jolla, California. Thomas, good morning.
Great interview, as always. And Marcus, I look forward to Nexus magazine being redistributed in the United States. My question is, I think that Russia and China have been blackmailing the United States government since the beginning. Because if you think about it, mysteriously, Richard Nixon, all of a sudden, out of the blue, went to China in 1971, and then there was the Russian grain harvest failure during the Vietnam War, in which President Nixon negotiated 25% of the United States wheat harvest to be sold to Russia to prevent famine. And there's even rumors today that mainland China is, blackmailing the government, and that is outplaying itself in geopolitical, policy. And I was wondering what your thoughts were on that, whether the moon flights were real or faked, or whether there's a secret space program. Obviously, as you have stated, the photographic narrative is very flawed.
All right, and Thomas, thank you for that. Let me get a quick comment from Marcus, and then I can move on to the next caller. Marcus.
Yeah, it's certainly true that America did supply vast quantities of wheat to the Soviet Union in the early 1970s because there had been a drought, a harvest had failed. America, a generous country, and they supplied the wheat that people could eat. Whether they are blackmailing America, I think, is open to debate. I think it's a very strong word. Persuading them may be a better word.
All right, wildcard line.
Have also sent a mission to the moon, and they reported that they did not see any evidence of any of the Apollo craft.
All right. Wildcard line, John is in Springfield, Missouri. John, a quick question or comment, please.
Fantastic show, and thank you for having me on. Just quickly, I believe that technology has caught up with the moon landings. If you could take a copy of Jurassic Park and send it back to the 1970s, okay, Pete, you could convince people that dinosaurs were real. Fact is that it's like any of those things that you see on the moon landing footage could be reproduced at any special local special effects house. I myself was a NATO peacekeeper. I was in Pazar, Hungary, where Gagarin actually trained. The man was 4'11", weighed probably about 70 pounds. You can see a statue of him life-size there, okay? And they could barely put him up in the air, and numerous cosmonauts died in an attempt, to be put up in the air. And even now, it's like we have technology, the moon landing supposedly now could be simulated with two laptops and a SpaceX rocket, but yet they don't do it. I can't help noticing that Trump, who is talking about a Mars mission, basically has stopped talking about it ever since he got elected and has been briefed.
All right, John, thank you for that. Okay, a quick question. Yes.
The Australian footage of the Coke bottle being kicked across the lunar surface. Your thoughts, sir. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead, Marcus. The Australian Coke bottle being kicked across the lunar surface.
The famous Australian Coke bottle. Yeah, that was from a correspondent in Western Australia. It's part of the film What Happened on the Moon, produced by Owlist.com. It's been debated whether that actually happened or not, because nobody can find a record of it, of the Coke bottle, which indicates that somebody kicked a Coke bottle across the set on which the moon landing was being filmed. It's quite possible it was, because, as I said, these are simulated exercises. These are training exercises, and it may well be that there was a Coke bottle there. There certainly wasn't a Coke bottle on the moon, because despite the best efforts of the Coca-Cola company, they haven't yet got a franchise on the moon.
All right, first time caller.
They had a franchise at the simulation exercise set.
All right, let's go to the first time caller. Last word goes to Jim in Wichita, Kansas. Jim, thanks for your patience. Quick question or comment.
Yeah, I watched all the videos and things on the moon when the astronauts would fall down, and they would fall very slowly, but they'd be flapping their arms rapidly as they fell to the ground. When they kicked up dust, it would fly away in straight lines, and it didn't just fall back to the surface right away. How did they fake the low gravity in all of these various things, dropping hammers and feathers? And there were just so many things.
All right, Jim, I think you addressed that earlier. You said over-cranking, correct, Marcus?
That's right, yeah. The famous hammer and feather drop, it can easily be faked. That's really not a problem. I mean, I've seen it. I've seen somebody recreate that particular scene where the hammer and the feather drop at the same speed. It's not difficult. You just put a bit of lead in the feather. Boom. You've got yourself a rather heavy feather. There are so many questions which arise on this subject. There are so many answers which can explain it. But in the same way that we've seen just in the last couple of days, the huge number of protests apparently against the newly elected president in the United States, there are different opinions of how things should be done. There are different opinions. You'd think the Apollo moon landings were factual. Therefore, there couldn't be much discussion about it. The point is, there is a huge amount of discussion about it, because if it was so easy to get to the moon in the 1960s, how come we've never been back?
That's an outstanding question, and you raised a lot of them. Marcus Allen, thank you so much. NexusMagazine.com, a pleasure. For George Norrie, George Knapp, Lisa Lyons, Stephanie Smith, Tom Danheiser, Dan Galante, Chris Burrows, Sean Latasor, Nathan Staten, Donna Walker, and here in Toronto, Nathan Smith, Scotty Guest, and the ghost of Philip Seymour Hoffman, Tom Schenck. I'm Richard Serrett. Thanks for your ears and your voices, your beautiful voices. So long for now.